Hello there, and welcome to Grimm Reading, where each episode we read and review a Brothers Grimm tale. My name is Matthew Hughes, and with me on this journey is my co-host, Mr. Adam Field. This week on Grimm Reading,
Grimwalden, Group D!
So make yourself comfortable and prepare for a
Grimm Reading!
Hello and welcome to Grimm Reading, where we are currently deep in our tournament to decide the best Brothers Grimm story from Volume 1. This time, it's the Group D Battle Off. The last episode of the group stages, Adam, before we move into the semi-finals.
This is getting very, very exciting. Group D, yeah, last group. Who have we got in this particular group?
In this episode, we'll be recapping the five stories: The Valiant Little Tailor, Gambling Hansel, Rapunzel, Sweetheart Roland, and The Girl Without Hands.
Very interesting group.
Is it indeed?
I think so.
Why is that?
I just have no idea. Just no idea of where this is going to go, how the vote's going to go down. This feels like a whole group of wild cards in a way.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
It doesn't have, I would say, any big hitters necessarily.
Oh,
of the classic kind? I don't know.
Blimey.
Is that controversial?
Wow, okay. Well, they've got a lot to prove tonight, these stories.
I think they do.
But yeah, this is our last group.
Yeah.
So we're at the end, finally, of my long recaps.
No, we're enjoying the long recap. Well, I am enjoying them anyway.
I couldn't speak for the listeners.
I can't speak for them.
Right, well, let's see if they win you over, Adam. First up is the top seed, the Valiant Little Tailor.
The Valiant Little Tailor. Recap.
One summer morning, a woman selling jam walked past a tailor's house.
Forgot about the jam.
So he brought some and spread it out on some bread. He was just ready to tuck in when a swarm of flies descended on his jam sandwich.
That is not good.
He grabbed a tea towel and swatted at them. And when the dust had settled, he looked and saw that 7 flies lay slain on the ground.
Incredible.
Well, he said to himself, "Are you that sort of fellow? 7 at one stroke. The whole world shall hear of this." And he cut out and embroidered himself a girdle with his new catchphrase inscribed, rammed a piece of old cheese and a bird in his pocket, and set off to tell the world of his deed.
A bird, did you say?
Bird, yeah.
I've forgotten that detail. What was the bird doing in his pocket?
It's going to be a lot of this. Oh, I've forgotten that detail.
Well, I've forgotten a lot.
I've forgotten that detail. So, you see, he's gone off into the world now.
Yeah, because he needs to tell people, excuse me, 7 at one blow. I'm that guy.
Well, first up, he climbed a mountain and found a giant sitting there. The giant called him a ragamuffin.
Of course.
So he opened his coat and said, "There you may read what kind of a man I am."
I love the image of that. I love it.
The giant picked up a rock and squeezed it until water came out. And he said, "Beat that, ragamuffin, if you're so tough." So the tailor took out the cheese and squeezed it out. The giant then threw a rock high in the air and said, "Do that, little mite of a man." The tailor replied, "Not bad, but your rock came back down. Uh-huh. Watch this."
Yes.
And he threw the bird in the air, which flew off and never came back.
Yep.
The giant said, okay, well, how about carrying things? Help me carry this fallen oak out of the forest." "Readily," said the tailor. "You take the front and I'll take the back." And then he hopped on the back of the tree and let the giant carry it, pretending he was carrying the bag.
And at no point did the giant turn around.
Nope. Next, they passed a cherry tree. And the giant bent the trunk down. The tailor grabbed a cherry, but the giant let go and it flung the tailor across the wood. He rushed back and the giant said, "What's this? You can't even hold the tree." And the tailor responded, "Ha! I leapt over the tree because the huntsmen are down there. Can't you jump over the tree?" The giant tried to jump over the tree, but couldn't. Absolutely bested by the tailor, this giant.
Yeah.
Anyway, he went to the giant's home to sleep, and there were loads of giants there. In the night, they came in to kill him, and they smashed the bed with an iron bar.
Oh, dear.
But the tailor was at the side of the bed, so he survived. In the morning, they all saw him emerge and were terrified and ran away.
love that. How he got out of that one was they just missed.
He was asleep. He travelled on and at some point went to sleep in a palace courtyard. And someone saw his belt, 7 at 1 blow.
Yeah.
And he awoke to find that the king had offered him military service because word had spread.
Oh, wow, he'd offered it to him.
Yeah.
I'd be like, oh, no thanks.
Well, this is exactly why the tailor has come, he says to the king. It's like, thank you, king. I thought you'd never ask. So he's joined the army.
Wow.
But the soldiers in the army were jealous and a little afraid of him.
Hmm.
The king found out that the other soldiers were unhappy and he thought, I've made a mistake here. Hmm. Shouldn't have hired this guy.
No.
So he summoned the tailor and he said, I've got a job for you. Two giants are ravaging the countryside. Go and sort them out and you can wed my daughter and inherit half the kingdom on my death. The tailor said, only two? That's nothing for me. So so he's off on his mission. The king's just trying to get rid of him, basically.
Yeah.
He got to the giants who were sleeping.
Right.
Under a tree. And he grabbed a handful of stones and he climbed the tree above them. Then he dropped one on a giant who woke up and said, oi, what are you pelting me for? And his companion said, I'm not pelting you. And they went back to sleep. The tailor dropped a stone on the other giant. You know, oi, they both woke up and eventually they had a fight and killed each other.
Genius.
The tailor hopped down from the tree and stabbed them each a few times with his sword just to prove that he'd killed them, make it look like he killed them. The soldiers, when they saw the scene, were astonished. But he said, that was nothing. 7 at 1 blow. That's my kind of affair. The tailor then demanded his reward from the king. But the king instead said, before you marry my daughter and take half my kingdom, there's a unicorn that does great harm. You must catch it. So he went, he found the unicorn and it was frothing at the mouth.
Oh dear.
And it charged at him to spear him with his horn.
A rapid unicorn.
But at the last second, he sprang away and the unicorn was impaled on a tree trunk and stuck. He roped it and then took it to the king. But the king again, Adam, reneged on the promise. Can you believe it?
Unbelievable.
And he said, before you get everything, there's a boar in the forest causing great havoc. You must catch it. So he set off and found the boar. It charged at him again.
Uh-oh.
But at the last second, the tailor sprang into a nearby chapel.
Yep.
The boar ran in after him, but the tailor jumped out the back window, ran round and bolted the door. So the boar was genius. Caught. And now he got to marry the princess, finally. Happily ever after, you might think.
Mm.
Well, no, because sometime later, she heard him in his sleep say, oh boy, make me the doublet and patch the pantaloons. And she realised that he was naught but a lowly tailor.
Uh-oh, bastard.
She told her father, the king, and he said, don't worry. Look, tonight I'll send my guards in to arrest him. But a friendly servant told the tailor this in advance.
Wow.
And he said, I'll soon put a screw into that business.
This guy.
So quotable.
He really is.
That night then, he pretended to be asleep. The guards crept in and he said, oh boy, make me the doublet and patch the pantaloons. I slayed 7 at 1 blow. I killed 2 giants. I brought away 1 unicorn and 1 boar. And now I'm expected to fear those standing outside the room? The guards ran for their lives. And no one ever trifled with the tailor again. And he remained a king until the end of his life. The end.
Wow.
That is story number 20 in the Grimm's Fairy Tales, Kinder and Housemarken. It was Grimm reading story number 80. Adam, you gave a score of 9. And I gave it a score of 9.
Oh, wow.
For a total of 18. Making it joint winner of season 5 along with Cinderella.
Wow. Okay. I'd forgotten it was scored that highly. And it's obviously, therefore, the top seed of this group. That's a high score, man.
Are you thinking too high?
Wow, am I? I don't know.
Adam.
My thoughts, though, as far as the story goes, I feel bad for the princess.
Yeah?
Does she want to be with this guy?
Well, she didn't when she found out he was a lowly tailor.
But she's stuck with him.
Yeah, that's true.
Oh, I don't know about this guy.
You know what? I'm glad it's coming out. This is Grimbledon's the time to get everything off your chest. Yeah. I've never felt you were that big a fan of this story.
I do like it, and there are several iconic lines, right? one of which I have on a t-shirt. It's that iconic, right?
Yeah, seven. I've never seen you wear.
One bloke. Oh dear. Oh dear. Right.
Seven at one.
Results bloke. Episode. I'm wearing that t-shirt.
You better be. It's got that line, right?
Yeah.
Which I feel like, you appreciate.
Yeah, it's iconic.
Exactly.
And I think it's one of those funny stories.
Mm.
You know, like, there is lots of humour in all of these stories, but some are intended to be funny.
Yeah.
Humorous stories. And this has got to be one
definitely.
Of them.
Definitely. And actually, often the ones that are meant to be funny aren't that funny, we've found. But this one definitely is. But I'd say it's a mix of a funny story and an epic fairy tale.
Yeah.
It's kind of got it all,
I'd
say. It's actually, I was thinking about it, it's strangely similar to the story of the youth who went forth to learn what fear was, but with more giants rather than ghosts. So you've got this overconfident guy, does scary challenges to win the princess, basically.
Yeah.
But this one, I'd say, unlike the story of the youth, has actual clever tricks. So he's also a trickster.
Yeah.
And he, like Puss in Boots, like Clever Gretel, he's using actual clever like mechanics to like best his opponents
totally
rather than just magic.
The youth in the story of the youth has no idea what's going on at any point. He's just a very strong guy who
is handsome
and he's so sort of clueless that lends him a sort of courage because he's not afraid of this whatever's going on. He famously can't shudder, whereas the tailor is a trickster. He's getting one over on all of these people. So I guess it's a similar arc, but he's more sort of tuned into what's going on.
Definitely. But I'd say it's not only the tricks, it's the character as well.
Yeah.
He's just brilliant. I sprinkled a few of his lines in there.
I enjoyed every single one.
Again, like the Wishing Table and the Gold Ass and the Story of the Youth, like the actual story.
Quotable.
It's so quotable. It's so well written. I'd recommend re-listening. His lines are superb.
I'd soon put a screw into this one. Or I'd
soon put a screw into that business. See what kind of a man I am. 7-1 blow.
The whole story starts with him flicking some flies with a tea towel. Yeah. I mean, just the madness of that. The absolute madness of that.
Yeah, that literally spurns the rest of the entire adventure.
One act.
He's so happy with
flicking
himself.
Flicking some flies with a tea towel. Do you know what? I'm talking myself back up to where I was before.
What's it lacking? Do you know? What are you not so drawn to?
The trouble is I can't even remember what I said at the time, but I feel like one of the things I might have said at the time is that he faces a lot of challenges throughout the story. Maybe feels like there's a bit of like retreading old ground or like repetition with it. You know, the several giants, like the way he defeats the unicorn, I guess isn't that different to how he defeats the boar. Like,
yeah, that's true. I did think that as well. I think maybe too much.
Yeah.
Let's just lose a few of those challenges.
Yeah.
Let's lose the boar, because I like the unicorn.
Yeah.
The rabid unicorn.
Yeah.
And let's lose maybe the cherry tree bit and the oak tree bit. Let's lose the tree parts.
Yeah.
Because I think in the episode we talked about how it doesn't have the kind of classic tripartite structure, the triptych. It has like five different things he does with the giants.
It's a little bit overstuffed.
It's added to three.
Could have done with an editor just chopping it down a bit.
But that is real nitpicking, because for me, I'm very happy with my 9. I feel like maybe you are more of an 8.5 kind of guy.
I think I might be, yeah.
Okay. Still haven't quite got to the bottom of why. I guess just the repetition, maybe.
I think that might be it.
Yeah.
And I just... Oh, man. I feel bad saying it, but I'm going to say it. I'm not sure if I like him that much. He's good to laugh at, but do I like the guy? I don't know.
I was about to say, I think you've taken against him. Yeah.
Whereas the youth, what a lad.
Why do you like the youth so much?
I don't know, Matt. I don't know. I can't explain
these things.
He's so good
looking.
That's probably what it
is. Beguiles you. Interesting. Okay, well, I mean, I'd say there's a clear split there. Mm. So we'll see how the voting goes.
Yeah, interesting.
I think on that note, let's move on to the second seed, which is Gambling Hansel.
Interesting. Gambling Hansel. Recap.
There was once a man who only gambled. That's it. That's all he ever did.
He never ate. He never slept.
And so, inevitably gambled everything away that he owned. And the day before the creditors were to take his house away, there was a knock at the door. It was God and St. Peter.
Mm-hmm.
They were looking for a place to stay the night. He said, sure, yeah, come on in, but I can't feed you, sorry. And they said, don't worry about that. We'll get the food. So St. Peter gave Hansel some money to go buy bread.
Go on.
But on his way to the shops, he passed the gambling house. And he couldn't help himself.
Yeah.
So he went in and gambled the bread money away. On returning home, he pretended he'd lost the money. So they gave him some more, and then he did get the bread this time. And God provided the wine. So they had a nice evening.
Nice.
Next morning, God said, I'll grant you three things, gambling Hansel. What do you want? And Hansel asked for a pack of cards with which he could win everything, a pair of dice with which he would win everything, and finally a tree on which every kind of fruit grew, and which anyone who climbed up couldn't come down until he allowed them to do so. And God said, all right, well, I thought you'd ask to go to heaven, but sure, magic tree, no problem. Gambling Hansel now set about gambling hard.
Oh, yeah.
And eventually, he'd won half the world.
Whoa, I'd forgotten he won half the world.
Well, so, it's got a cards with which he can win everything and dice with which
he can win everything. Half the money in the world belongs to him.
Yeah.
Incredible.
Well, St. Peter thought the same, Adam, and he was looking down at all this, shaking his head. And he said, Lord, he can't go on or he'll take the whole world from you. We need to send death. And God said, sure, Pete, whatever. So death was dispatched. And he met Hansel at the gambling table and he asked him to step outside. And Hansel said, sure. Hang on a minute, though. I'm right in the middle of a game. I'll meet you outside. While you wait, though, would you mind getting up into the tree to get some fruit for our journey? And Death thought, that sounds fair enough. And he climbed the tree, collected some fruit, but he couldn't get down again.
Oh, no.
Because of the magic tree that God gave him.
Yeah.
And Hansel left him there for 7 years, during which time nobody died.
Oh.
Because Death can't do his business. I forgot about
that implication. Whoa. That's crazy.
Eventually, again, St. Peter, watching all this, said, boss, this can't continue. Let's go sort it out ourselves. And God said, you're right, Petey, let's do this. Let's go. And God said, Hansel. And Hansel sheepishly went and let Death down from the tree. Death immediately killed him and spirited him to the next world, where they came to the door of heaven. Hansel knocked, but a voice said, you're not welcome here. So they went to the door of hell and they let him in. And Hansel started gambling with Lucifer, with the devil himself.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
But because he had his magic cards,
He kept winning.
And eventually he won all the demons and the devils from him, because that's all Lucifer had to gamble with.
Right.
So he's overpowered the devil, basically. So he left hell with his new crew and they went to Hohenfurt, grabbed a hot pole and started smashing on the ceiling of heaven, which began to crack. Peter's like, God, we must let him in or he'll destroy heaven. And so Hansel was ushered into heaven and he said, thanks very much, guys, finally. And then he started to gamble. He loves gambling.
He just loves it.
But it made heaven very noisy. So St. Peter said, oh, we must throw him out, God. This is absolutely unbearable. I can't hear myself think. So they threw him down from heaven, where his soul broke into fragments and went into the gambling vagabonds who are still living this very day. The end. That is story number 82 in the Grimm's Fairy Tales. It was Grimm Reading story number 42. Adam, you gave it 8.5 and I gave it a 9 for a total of 17.5, which made it the winner of season 2 of Grimm Reading. Did any of that make any sense?
I think so.
Did you follow it?
Yeah, it's been a while since I had that one.
If anything was unclear, please let me know.
No, I in classic Adam fashion, forgotten most of it. I'm shocked to hear it won series 2. Did it really?
Yeah, and there was a whole kind of slight controversy in the fact that we were like, ooh, we've given that a very high score. And when we did a kind of mini competition asking people to tell us where we scored poorly,
yeah,
you know, 99% of people were talking about stories that we scored too low. Yeah. But we had a couple of people who said, you scored this one too high.
Do you think they're all right?
On revisiting, I fell in love all over again.
This one is one of yours, basically. The scores actually don't really reflect that. So yes, you scored higher, but only by 0.5.
Yeah.
But I have always felt spiritually like this one is your love. It's got Death, which is one of your favourite characters.
Oh, all-star cast.
Yeah.
We've got Death in there.
Yeah.
We've got St. Peter.
Yeah.
We've got God.
Yeah.
And we've got Hansel. So this is what happened to him after the Hansel and Gretel saga escapade.
Got addicted to gambling and ended up being shattered into 1,000 pieces and going into all of the gamblers today.
Adam, look, it's action-packed mayhem, this story. Yeah. We've got an anti-hero protagonist. It keeps sidestepping expectations. It's just a romp. I absolutely love it. And you got me the Philip Pullman book for Christmas.
Yes.
This is in his book. And he described it as, I quote, lively, swift, and ludicrous. And I think for me that sums it up.
Yeah.
I got the feeling he likes it as well.
Yeah.
It's just brilliant. It's just this sort of weird action comedy drama that I love.
I would say that's accurate. I actually really enjoyed the recap.
Did you? I was worried I was losing you at that point, as in you weren't following what I was
saying. It's bonkers. It's completely bonkers. I mean, it really is. But I enjoyed it. Would he, if he got up in the tree, he could just cut down again, couldn't he?
Yeah.
Because he's in control.
Yeah.
Could anyone cut down the tree?
I feel like you're bamboozled by this one.
I am, and I sort of, as a result of that, don't really know where I stand in terms of the score.
I worry that I've tried to tighten up the recaps, and maybe I over-tightened. So it was a bit like, wait, what?
Yeah. Or did you sort of distill it down to its essence?
Yeah.
Maybe, I don't know.
I just love it. I think you've got exasperated St. Peter, which I always love. I love that God and Peter are there at the start and just send him away to go get some bread. And then they're just sitting there waiting for him, but he's gambling all night. I love how it's constantly, it's a bit like the fisherman and his wife in a way. Like, it's kind of stretching and stretching, the tensions ratcheting up. And every time you think he's defeated, he wins.
Yeah.
You know, you send Death to him. When he does eventually go to hell, he then comes back again, and then he gets let into heaven. So it's that kind of similar setup to the fisherman and his wife.
Yeah, yeah.
But it just goes completely bonkers, because he comes out and then he's smashing the ceiling of heaven. It's just really surreal.
Yeah.
It just works for me.
I think it's probably got some of the most surreal imagery we've had.
Yeah, we haven't even mentioned Death in a magical fruit tree.
Stuck in the tree.
Stuck in a tree with all sorts of fruit in it.
Yeah.
Everything from a pineapple, Adam.
Yeah.
To a pear, to a banana, to a dragon fruit. Just picture that.
Yeah.
You're not feeling this one either.
No, I am. I was just thinking, actually, you know, in the extended sort of grim cinematic universe, this guy had, presumably, maybe not even that long ago, lost his godson. Do you think Godfather Death?
Death, yes.
And, you know, he's probably still thinking about that. He's stuck in a tree.
Yeah.
So that's another element to it. And Hansel, of course.
Yeah. Well.
Gambling after his traumatic experience as a kid. And, that's a lot to this story, Matt. You're winning when you're round.
It sounds like to me, Adam, that you're searching in here for a lot of sort of pathos and depth. And you're in luck, because the next three stories are a lot more serious.
Okay.
I have a lot more pathos. This is just, for my money, this is just a fun romp. But I'm going to serve you what you want. So let's move on to the next story.
Let's do it.
Which is the third seed, Rapunzel.
Mm-hmm. Rapunzel. Recap.
There was once a couple, a woman and a man, who wished to have a child, but it just wasn't happening.
Mm.
Now, one day, the woman was looking out of the window and into the neighbor's garden, and she spied some Rapunzel growing there, or rampion, and she had an overwhelming urge to eat it.
Mm.
The problem was, this garden was the property of a scary enchantress by the name of Dame Gothel.
I forgot she was a dame.
But the woman was like, I don't care, I'm going there. I need me some salad.
Yeah, Yeah, boy.
So the man said, okay, you know what? I'll go. Just stay here. I don't want you to get killed. So he broke into the garden and he brought her back the Rapunzel, which she ate up, but she wasn't satisfied. So he said, okay, I'll go get some more. He clambered into the garden again, but suddenly Dame Gothel appeared.
Oh, no.
And she said, thief, you shall suffer for this. And he pleaded mercy and he explained about his wife. You know, she's addicted to your salad. I'm really sorry.
the phrase, she's addicted to your salad. What an incredible phrase.
Dame Gothel softened a little and said, very well, take as much rampion as you like. But when your wife bears a child, I will take it. It will be treated well, don't worry. And the man said, anything, fine, whatever. Now, the woman, his partner, became pregnant. And when she had the baby, instantly Gothel appeared, named the child Rapunzel, and ran away, taking the girl with her.
Well, it's a traumatic experience.
When the girl was 12 years old, Gothel locked her in a tower in the forest. It had no stairs or door, and at the top was just a little window, and she'd sit there and sing.
Did it have no stairs? Yeah. I'd forgotten that detail.
Yeah, she's just trapped in the tower.
How did she get up there?
Well, that's actually quite a good question.
So did the...
I think there probably were stairs when it was initially constructed, and then they just demolished them.
Gothel took them away. Okay.
Yeah.
She didn't like sort of look at her and go, and then she just sort of levitated up into the tower. That's what I was picturing.
Well, she might have made like a lasso out of her hair and then climbed up.
Oh, that's true.
Maybe. We can only speculate.
That's all we can do, Matt.
But all we know at this point is that the only way that Dame Gothel could visit her was via Rapunzel's long blonde hair.
Yeah.
So the system was, she'd stand at the bottom of the tower and cry, Rapunzel, Rapunzel, let down your hair.
Classic.
And she'd then climb up the hair. One day, though, a prince was out gallivanting around the forest, and he heard Rapunzel singing. He was utterly enraptured, and at some point, he saw Dame Gothel, and he watched the hair-climbing system, and he thought, aha, there's my ride up to the enchanting singer. Next day, he came back, and he stood at the base of the tower and cried, Rapunzel, Rapunzel, let down your hair. Hair arrived, and he ascended.
Right. Do you think...
It's like, ding!
Do you think... Okay, do you think they climb floor six? Do you think they climb the hair like you would climb a rope, like you know, you see in old-fashioned like gym class, whatever? Or do you think they're sort of holding the rope and then walking up the wall like you would in an abseiling type thing?
I thought they're like just hoisting.
The former, yeah. I think you're probably right. But I like to imagine them holding it and walking up the wall like in some sort of rock climbing.
Again, we could only speculate.
Yeah, that's all we could do.
But anyway, the prince has gone up, and Rapunzel was at first shocked. She's like, who the heck are you? You're not Gothel. And he said, don't worry, I'm a handsome prince. It's all good. Will you marry me? And she said, yes, okay. Then they concocted a plan to escape. He'd bring silk every visit, and she'd weave a silk ladder out of it.
Ah, genius.
So every day, Dame Gothel visited, and then every evening the prince came. So everything's going to plan. But it's eventually foiled when one day Rapunzel foolishly said to Gothel, while they were just hanging out during the day, tell me, why are you so much heavier to draw up on my hair than the prince?
Oh,
whoops.
Why would you say that?
Gothel was like, you've been doing what? And she grabbed some scissors and cut off Rapunzel's hair, grabbed the girl and dumped her in a desert. That night, the prince came to the tower and the hair appeared. He climbed up, you know, hi, darling. Wait, who are you? And Gothel said, the beautiful bird sits no longer in the nest. The cat's got it. No more Rapunzel for you, lover boy. Or words to that effect.
Yeah.
He was so upset, though, that he hurled himself out of the tower and landed eyes first in some thorns, ooh, blinding him. He then staggered around the world in mourning, but eventually stumbled upon Rapunzel in the desert. They embraced. She cried into his eyes, and he could see again. First thing he saw were the twins. She'd given birth to twins. He led her back to his kingdom, and they had a great life together forever. The end. That is story number 12 in the Grimm's Fairy Tales. It was Grimm Reading Story 32. Adam, you gave it an 8. And I gave it a 9.
Oh, wow.
For a total of 17. What do you think?
I enjoyed it.
Did it all come back to you?
It did in the end. Again, things I've forgotten. I don't know why, but I'd forgotten that it was actually the prince himself that just sort of hurled himself out.
Mm.
For some reason, I thought he was pushed out or something by Dane Gothel.
The thing is, Adam, that's exactly the sort of myth that the podcast should be dispelling.
I know.
I would have been the same going into it. I think that's just the image that you have, is the witch throwing him out.
Yeah.
But no, he's just so upset that he jumps off in the tub. He's just despairing.
That's awful. But by the time he finds her again, she's already given birth.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Well.
That's just interesting, that's all.
The thing is, yeah, so if this one goes through into the semi-finals, we'll talk more around the story. So I suppose just to say for now, in the original first publication of this story, she gave the game away to Gothel by saying, why are my clothes becoming so tight?
Right, yeah.
So the implication was she was pregnant.
Yeah.
That was then tidied up and cleaned up by the Grimms to say, why are you so heavy when I pull you up? And then she just randomly gives birth to twins later. But it was more explicit originally that she was pregnant.
Well, I think that earlier version makes more sense because she would be naive about that fact, and it's an innocent question. Saying, why are you so much heavier than the other guy that comes up? It's just a stupid thing to say.
And like, quite insulting.
Yeah, well, yeah, true.
But you know what? I love this one.
Me too.
But I'm not quite sure why. I don't know. It just works for me really well.
Same. It's not actually one of the more bombastic, crazy adventures that we've got. It's not. But there's kind of something about it. The classic princess in the tower.
Yeah.
The salad element. That's a bit weird.
The salad. Oh.
Honestly.
I know. And I think I'm a fan of Dane Gothel as well. Because she's not just like a pure evil villain.
Yes.
And actually, unusually, she doesn't get burnt to death at the end or, like, thrown in a barrel with nails. She just disappears.
Yeah.
Unlike the witch in the next story we're about to meet, just to say.
Spoiler.
But, it's almost like in this story, everybody just wants something and no one's, like, a total monster. She does raise Rapunzel well and she kind of overprotects her.
Yeah.
But she's not just this pure evil villain. And the parents aren't just neglectful entirely.
No.
Do you know what I mean? Like, everyone's kind of got a reason for what they're doing.
Yes. Yeah.
It's not just... I don't know. It's a little less simple, maybe, than other ones. Where it's just clear villain, clear hero, and you kill the villain. You know what I mean?
Yeah, totally.
And it's got all these themes of, like, real coming-of-age themes. Which a lot of... I mean, arguably all fairy tales are a kind of coming-of-age journey. But this one, you really feel that. Especially with that original version where she's clearly pregnant.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I totally agree. And I think with the whole princess and prince thing, I would say that dynamic works better here than it does in Sleeping Beauty.
Yeah.
Where
because it's consensual? Or what?
Well, that too. But also the prince is a little bit superfluous in a way to the Sleeping Beauty story.
Yeah.
Whereas it's kind of integral to this one.
Yeah. It's their relationship.
Yeah. I mean, she did agree to marry literally the first guy she ever saw.
But he said, look, I'm a handsome prince. Marry me.
Who's she to argue with that?
Well, I've got nothing. So sure.
Yeah, my options are limited.
I thought it's interesting how lots of stories that we've even just had in Grimbledon open with a parents who couldn't have a child.
Mm.
So we've had the Juniper Tree.
Yes.
That's what happened. Sleeping Beauty as well.
Yep.
Where the like frog came out of the water. Thumbling was the same. And now Rapunzel.
That's weird, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
More common theme than we thought. And not one I think we've really picked up on before or talked about, is it?
I don't think so, no. And I'd say now in Grimbledon, the themes that are emerging are parents who can't have a child being the kind of like opening salvo, almost like the catalyst in a way for everything that follows.
Yeah.
And birds, just lots of birds doing everything.
Birds, aren't they? Yeah.
So these are our themes that I've picked up on so far with our stories. Yeah.
Infertile people and birds. Interesting.
Yeah. But no, okay, so we're feeling good about that one, I think.
I think so. In terms of my score, I'm not sure. I mean, 8's maybe still good. I'd also be happy if I'd gone for a 9 like you. I think so. I'm not...
Nice.
Oh, I don't know, Matt. It's like I'm already doubting myself.
Well, I'm glad you enjoyed it. It's one that's gone under the radar a little bit, I feel.
Definitely.
But I'm very, very happy it's in Grimbledon.
Me too.
I'm pleasantly surprised you enjoyed that one, Adam. I know you're going to enjoy the next one.
Mm-hmm.
The fourth seed is Sweetheart Roland.
Yes. Sweetheart Roland, recap.
There was once a witch with two daughters. One was a stepkid, who was lovely. The other was her biological child, who was awful.
Mm.
Her biological child was jealous of her stepsister's apron. And she told her mum about that she's jealous of the apron. And her mum said, don't worry, I've got a plan. Tonight, when you're both sleeping in the bed that you share, go over to the wall side and push your sister to the other side. I'll come in and cut her head off, and then the apron will be yours.
It's a solid plan. And there's probably no other way you could play this out. There's no other way to do it.
Well, fly in the ointment. The proposed victim, the stepdaughter, heard all this.
Mm.
So in the night, she waited until her evil stepsister had fallen asleep. She swapped places and then pushed her to the edge of the bed.
Genius.
The witch mum came in and hacked off her own biological daughter's head and went back to bed.
Horrific.
Yeah. The girl ran to her sweetheart, Roland.
This guy again.
And said, Roland, we got to get out of here. He said, sure, yes, let's go. But first, go back and take your stepmom's wand or else we're done for.
Mm.
So she stole back home to get the wand. And for good measure, she also picked up her sister's severed head and shook out some blood. One droplet on the stairs, one in front of the bed, and one in the kitchen or something. I didn't make a note. She went back to Roland and they eloped. Nice. In the morning, the witch mum woke up and got excited to give her daughter the apron. And she said, where are you, dear? And the first drop of blood said, I'm on the stairs sweeping. Then the other drops of blood each said, I'm here doing this and that.
Yeah.
And when she finally got to the room, the bedroom, she saw her daughter that she'd killed. And she sprang on the window and used her supervision to find the stepdaughter.
Oh, yes, the supervision.
She clocked them and then she put on her magic speed boots and strode after them. Roland and the girl were running away, but they saw the witch gaining on them.
Yeah.
The girl whipped out the wand and turned Roland into a lake and herself into a duck. The witch arrived at the lake, tried to feed the duck bread and coax it in, but failed and went home.
Phew! Imagine if that plot failed. Like, I've tricked her. I've turned into a duck. Oh, that bread looks so good, though. Oh, no.
And Roland Lake's like, no.
No, don't do it.
Anyway, so the witch has gone home now.
Yeah.
So they changed back to human form and just ran on the whole night. But the witch came after them again next day.
Mm.
And they saw her coming. So the girl turned herself into a beautiful flower in a thorny briar hedge and turned Roland into a musician. He was like, but I already play music. She's like, no, I'm turning you into a proper musician.
a little bit hurt, but okay.
The witch arrived.
Yeah.
And she said, musician, may I pick that lovely flower? And he said, go ahead, I'll play while you do it. And he began to fiddle, and the witch was forced to dance. And she danced and danced and danced, and the thorns pricked her until she bled to death.
Oof.
Duh, they've defeated the evil witch mum.
Nailed it. Story's over, right?
Well, not quite, Adam. Roland said, darling, great, let's get married. I'll rush home and ask father to arrange the wedding. You wait here until I get back.
Hmm.
And she said, okay, Roland, while I wait, I'll turn into a red milestone. So
it's like, oh, yeah, okay.
So we're nearly at the end. He's just going to go arrange the wedding, Adam.
Absolutely, yeah. It's all sorted, right?
Roland went home. Where he got into a relationship with another woman.
It's making my blood boil again, Matt. this guy.
I'm really like dragging it out to make it worse, just to rile you up. Our girl, she waited and waited. And then when he didn't come back, she turned herself into a sad flower, hoping to be trampled.
Oh, no.
Now, a shepherd lived nearby and found the flower and plucked it, took it home and put it in his chest. But from that day on, whenever he woke up, all the household chores had been done and food was out. And he thought, this is weird. So he went to a wise woman and she said, this sounds like magic. I suggest you wake up early, and if anything's moving around your cabin, throw a white cloth over it and that'll fix your problem. So he did that and caught the flower, which turned back into the girl. And he said, please marry me. She said, no, I love another, Roland. But they stayed living together as housemates.
That's sweet.
Roland's wedding to the new fiance was all set up, and the big day finally arrived. As is custom in the land,
yeah,
all the girls in the country had to come and sing one by one.
Yeah.
And our girl, she hung out at the back, but eventually she had to sing.
Yeah.
And she started singing. Roland heard her, and he thought, I know that voice. That is my true bride. He called off the wedding, married our girl, and joy began. The end. Story number 56 in Kinder and Housemarken. It was Grim Reading story 38. Adam, you gave an 8.5, and I gave it an 8, for a total of 16.5.
Whoa.
What do you think?
I love that story. It's no secret. I love that story. I think I should have given it higher even than 8.5, I think. At least a 9.
Yeah.
Roland, can't stand him.
I mean, love to hate him.
There's things I'd like to call him, but I won't do it on this podcast.
Goodness me.
I mean, in the space of however many paragraphs, he's ruined two women's lives.
Come on, Roland. I'm a bit scared.
Does the protagonist, the lady who's not named, she's a flower in this shepherd's chest?
Yes.
When she gets up at night to do the housework, does she remain as a flower? Is there a flower pottering about doing the housework?
Oh, no.
Because it says when he puts the sheet over the flower, she turns back into her.
Yeah.
So she's like washing the dishes as a flower.
That makes me love the story even more.
Isn't that incredible?
That's amazing. Oh, it's a 9 from me as well.
The duck and the lake, the supervision, the incredible boots, the apron. What's so great about the apron? I don't know. The beheading, the talking blood.
Yeah.
What a story, man.
Yeah.
What a story.
First beheading in group D. Yeah. We had a lot last time.
That is true.
It is amazing.
Yeah.
It's a cracker. It's really like fairy tale-y as well. It's quite Hansel and Gretel-y there with the witch. But I feel like it, for me, as well as all those elements you've listed, it's got that extra something with the spurned love.
Yeah.
With the lovelorn heroine. It's that real sort of heartbreak in there.
Totally.
So for me, it's a bit like Rapunzel. There's something else there going on in this one, which I really like about it. It feels like there's a bit of extra depth to it.
Totally. I completely agree. And that reminds me of, I think, something we said in the Sweet Horror Island episode, which is that so many relationships in the Grimm's fairy tale world feel very transactional. And this is a very sort of devotional, the idea of having a sweetheart, the idea of mourning someone because he's gone off with someone else, the idea of true love, who are you supposed to be with? It's quite emotional.
It's also got shaking out drops of blood from a severed head.
If a story can run the gamut between that and all the love stuff I was just talking about, that is a story for me.
All the love stuff and the severed head.
Yep.
That could be the subtitle of the story. Wow, okay. Well,
so do you share my love for this story then? Or
yeah.
Sounds like you do.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's great. A lot of these, on revisiting for the recaps, I kind of like re-fell in love with them, or they were almost better than I remembered. And this was one of them, I think. This was a really, it's a really, really good one. I think at the time I felt it was just a bit, there wasn't any big enough event, maybe. There's just lots of little things happening. I don't know. I'm kind of just thinking out loud here. But yeah. I'm trying to wonder why... Yeah, I gave it an 8, not a 9.
Yeah.
I think I'm still happier that I gave Rapunzel a higher score, I think. But I could give this a higher score. I think it's an absolutely fantastic one. And so many memorable moments.
Yeah.
And as I said, it's got that extra depth. So yeah, no, I love it as well.
Amazing. Well, I'm happy to hear that.
Adam, we are almost at the end of the recaps. There's just one more story to recap.
Well,
out of all the group stages, there's one left. Do you remember what it is?
I do, actually.
Yeah?
You were chuckling there because you didn't think I did, but I actually do remember.
I just felt bad that I'd asked you. It's a guilty laugh. What is it?
It is the wild card for this group, the girl without hands.
The girl without hands.
This is a blast from the past. The girl without hands. Recap.
A miller had fallen into poverty and had nothing left but his mill and an apple tree. One day in the forest, an old man came up to the miller and he said, "I'll make you rich, miller, if you promise me what is standing behind your mill." The miller thought, well, that must be the apple tree. Sure, yeah, you're on. They shook hands, signed a contract, and the old man said, "I'll be back in 3 years to pick it up, to pick up what's mine." But when the miller got home, he realised it wasn't the tree, but his daughter who'd been out in the back.
Don't.
And it must have been the devil that he'd made a deal with. So the girl spent the next 3 years praying, and then finally the devil arrived to claim her. However, she'd had a wash and drawn a white circle with chalk around herself, so the devil couldn't get to her. The devil said to the miller, "Remove all the water so she can't wash herself." And next day, the devil came again, but she'd cried so much onto her hands that they were clean, so he failed again. The devil went angrily to the miller and said, "Cut off her hands or else I can't take her." The miller was so frightened that he agreed. And the girl said, "It's fine, Dad, just do it." So her father cut off her hands.
Horrendous. Somehow more horrendous than beheadings.
And thus we have the start of our old hatred of millers.
Yeah, this is where it started, wasn't it? Yeah. But we don't trust these guys.
So next day, the devil came and he thought that he'd have her. But she'd cried so much on the stumps that they were clean. He was defeated. The contract was void. And he went away empty handed. No pun intended. I didn't mean the pun when I wrote that down.
It's very good.
Dad said, "Thank God. Look, we're rich and we'll look after you now."
Yeah.
She said, "Sorry, I can't stay here. Goodbye." And she had her arms bound behind her back and set off. Now, at some point, she arrived at a body of water, on the other side of which was a royal garden with fruit growing in it.
Lovely.
And she's really hungry, but she can't get there. So she knelt and prayed to God. Suddenly, an angel appeared, separated the water, and they went through together into the royal garden. She was starving hungry, so she ate a pear from the tree with her mouth, with the angel just standing by. Now, also, the gardener was watching all this.
Yeah.
In the morning, the king sauntered down to the garden to count his pears, and he found that one was missing. He went up to the gardener, and the gardener said, "You're not going to believe this, but I can explain." So that night, the king and gardener hid themselves to watch.
Yeah.
And the king had brought a priest with him as well, just in case things got hairy. Again, at midnight, the girl and the angel came out of a bush, and she nibbled a pear. And the priest ran out saying, "Are you a demon, or where do you come from?" And she explained everything.
Yeah.
The king was impressed, took her home, had silver hands made for her, and married her. Are you following?
I'm following. Following.
Excellent.
So the girl without hands now has hands.
Silver hands.
Silver hands.
Happily ever after, you might think.
You would think.
But no, because a year later, the king had to go to war.
Oh, no.
And while he was out on campaign, the queen gave birth. Now, the queen mother wrote a letter to the king with the good news. A messenger was dispatched with the letter, but while the messenger was napping en route, the devil came and switched the letter for one which said that the queen had given birth to a monster. Messenger woke up, got to the king on the front line. The king was disturbed when he read that his wife had given birth to a monster.
That's pretty weird, yeah.
But he wrote back, just look after the queen and wait till I get back. We'll sort this out when I'm home.
Yeah.
However, when the messenger went to sleep on the return journey, again, the devil switched the letter out, saying that the queen and the child had to be put to death. Queen Mother was shocked when she received the letter. They had some more correspondence, which I'll spare you.
Fair enough,
but
yeah.
The devil kept interfering, so it was just a mess.
Yeah.
And the Queen Mother thought she was under strict instructions to kill her daughter-in-law.
But she doesn't want to, right?
No. And she went up to the girl and said, look, I can't kill you, but you can't stay here. You're going to have to leave.
Mm.
So the girl had her child tied to her back and set off once more. She prayed at some point and the angel arrived. Nice to see you again. Angel led her to a house with a sign that said, here all dwell free. And she went in and she loved it so much that she stayed 7 years and her hands grew back.
Whoa, incredible.
War's over. The king returned home and he said, where's the family? Where's my fam? And his mum said, you beast, you made me kill them. And they cried together. And she said, don't worry, actually, they run off. They're probably fine. I thought you wanted me to kill them. But now you've explained, I understand. He vowed to find them and not eat until he had. He searched 7 long years, but God kept him alive because he wasn't eating. And eventually he came to the house with the sign, here all dwell free.
Mm.
The angel showed him in and he lay down to sleep and put his handkerchief over his face. The girl who was next door said to her child, sorrowful, go and pick up your father's hanky and put it back on his face. He's called Sorrowful, the child.
I'd forgotten that, yeah. Brilliant name.
But he had a tantrum and he said, Mom, how can I do that when I don't have a father? And the king hopped up and said, I am your father. Wait a minute. My wife doesn't have any hands, so maybe this is a mistake. She said, no, God grew them back for me. He raised an eyebrow, but the angel went to the other room and got the silver hands as proof. And he was content. Okay. He was happy.
Yeah.
And they went home and lived happily ever after. The end. That is story number 31 in Kinder and Housemarken. Grim reading story number 5. Adam, you scored it 4.5 and I scored it 4 for a total of 8.5.
That there is no question that's a horrendous miscarriage of justice.
As if there weren't enough in the story already to then commit another one. Isn't that the lesson of the story?
It is. That's awful. What were we doing? It was obviously early days.
Yeah.
And we hadn't figured out, we hadn't calibrated our scoring yet, but that doesn't sit well, does it? Well, I gave it for you 4.5, or was it the other way around? Sorry.
Well, you gave it 4.5, I gave it 4.
Okay, but pretty close. That's shocking.
Well, interestingly, we have 3 very early stories in Grimbledon.
Mm.
Thumbling, The Three Little Men in the Wood, and The Girl Without Hands were episodes 3, 4, and 5, respectively.
Wow.
But The Three Little Men in the Wood got a massive score.
So that came into Grimbledon legitimately, like that's a seeded player, as it were. The Girl Without Hands and Thumbling only got in as wild cards.
Yeah, exactly. And incredibly, Thumbling has the exact same score, but it's reversed.
Oh.
So weirdly, I gave this one a lower score than you, but this is my wild card, and you gave Thumbling a lower score than me, but it's your wild card.
Does that suggest we both feel bad about
The reason I chose this one is because, as mentioned in Gambling Hansel, we had a competition a few years ago asking which was the greatest scoring injustice on Grim Reading. And this is the one that I think we had the most messages about.
Mm.
And the winner of that competition chose this story.
Yep.
So it is arguably the greatest crime we have committed score-wise. In terms of correspondence from listeners and us agreeing. And the competition winner was the person who chose, one of the people who chose this story.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's clearly very poorly scored.
Yeah.
It's a great story. The the correspondents we had in that scoring injustice competition were far more eloquent and erudite yeah. than we'll be. But yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, like the imagery is amazing.
Yeah.
It's got so many like incredible moments that stick in my mind. It's moving, yet yeah. somehow comical. There's twists and turns at every step. You know, at each point it could finish, but it just kind of carries on. Yeah. There's just a bit more going on.
And for it to, after all that, then have a happy ending, essentially.
Yeah.
It's quite amazing.
Yeah. However, what I would say, the only thing I would say is that there's a kind of melancholy to it.
Mm.
There's something quite sad about the whole affair. It leaves me a little bit like, I need to hear Gambling Hansel after I've heard this. Do you know what I mean? I need a little pick-me-up.
No, I know what you mean. And you know, weirdly enough, as you recap the story and I picture it in my head, it's sort of like very misty and foggy, and there's a sort of gloom in the air, I think, in the images that I see in my head. And our kid is literally called Sorrowful.
I know.
Sorrowful.
I know.
Honestly.
I didn't actually really remember like certain bits of this one. Mm. I think because it's such an early one. Like, I didn't remember why she'd lost her hands. I didn't remember this whole deal with the devil.
Right, yeah.
And that the devil had told the miller to cut her hands off. And she'd said, go on, Dad, it's fine. And he's like, okay then.
I remember there was something like that. I didn't remember the exact details, but I did remember that like he was worried about doing it and she said to him, no, do it. Wow. So I remember that, and that's kind of tragic because then you're like, don't stick up for your daddy's. He's awful.
I remember her nibbling the pear off the tree.
Of course you do.
That's the main thing I remember.
Yeah, it's quite the image.
And I remember the devil swapping out the letters.
Yeah.
As the messenger slept by a little brook.
Yeah, I remember, and I do remember, obviously, you had to abridge the story, but I remember other details, like with the deer tongue and stuff. That was evidence that she'd killed her.
Look, after the last few group stage episodes, I went through this and made it really as tight as possible so it doesn't go on forever. Yeah, there was a bit where in one of the devil letters,
yeah,
it said, cut out her eyes and tongue as proof that you've killed her to the queen's mum.
Yeah.
And so she cut out the eyes and tongue of a stag, which she presented to the king when he got home. And that's why he was distraught. He was like, oh, you have killed her. Because she's like, look, see, I have killed her. So yeah, I left that out. But I mean, the bulk of it's there. And yeah, I know what you mean. There's a gloom around it.
Yeah. It's a bit gloomy. And there's something particularly macabre about cutting off the hands. And I can't quite explain it. In a cinematic universe where there's beheadings and barrels full of spikes and something about the simple act of cutting someone's hands off, it's awful, isn't it?
Yeah, and then it's the fact that she, you know, leaves the home for obvious reasons, but then she's kind of creates this new family with the king and has a kid, and then even then she's not safe.
Yeah.
And she has to just leave again.
Yeah.
And it's just awful.
Yeah.
To the point, no wonder she's calling her kid Sorrowful. You know what I mean?
True.
I hope they change that name, though, at some point.
I hope so.
Deep hole.
And I think that kid at this point has lived most of its life in quite a happy-sounding place. In the all who go here are free or whatever.
That's true.
Yeah.
I'm just worried about inherited trauma, you know?
Yeah, yeah,
exactly. If you're calling your kid Sorrowful. I mean, he's not Sorrowful. He's having a great time.
Has she heard of nominative determinism? Because this is not a good idea. Yeah.
What kind of score do you think you would give it? Or is that a hard question to answer?
Good question. I think it's in the region of sort of 8.
Okay.
Which would put it, I guess, if you're kind of in agreement, it would put it at the level where it would then, I guess, qualify for Grimbledon. So, and I think we're both agreeing that it deserves to be here. So, yeah, I'd go somewhere in the region of 8. I think. What about you?
Yeah, maybe similar. I'm actually not sure. It's really tricky. I'd have to hear the whole story again, but I'd say maybe an 8 or a 9. Mm. It is really good. Maybe I've sort of sucked the magic out of it with my recap, but it's a really good one. And I'm glad that you enjoyed that one. I feel like at the start of the episode, these stories had to win you over. But the last three you've particularly enjoyed. So I feel like they've done their job.
I think they have.
By and large, this group has won Adam over.
Yes.
And this is the last group. That was the last story recap of Grimbledon. Hopefully the last one I'll ever have to do. But what a journey we've had through the stories.
It really has been a journey. So at this point, we have had a good old recap of 20 stories that we've read over the last, like, very nearly 6 years.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
20 of the best stories as well.
Yeah, exactly.
And speaking of which, the voting for Group D is now open for listeners, and it's going to be live for 2 weeks. So please, listeners, vote for your favourite story of Group D. Just go to the poll. There'll be a link in our episode description here, so whatever device or app or platform you're listening to this on, if you scroll down to the description, you'll find a link. We'll also put links on social media, on Twitter, on Instagram, and on our website as well, which is, Adam, I always forget.
Grimreading.wordpress.com.
Yeah, that'll probably work.
That was a guess, so it might be that, it might not be.
But the final thing to do is for you and I, Adam, to write down the two stories that we would want to go through from this group.
Absolutely. We are going to write down favourite two of those, of that group.
Okay. Oh. There
Matt's
you go.
Folding his bit of paper, but it sounds like he's regretting it. Okay, we'll put that in the envelope and seal it up.
Yeah, that's the hardest one to decide out of all of them.
Yeah, you really agonised over that.
I'm not happy with that. I'm really not happy, Adam.
Oh dear. I've sealed the envelope up now.
That's okay. Oh, that was really tough.
So well, I'm now holding 4 sealed envelopes, one for each group.
Wow.
Each one has 2 picks from me and 2 picks from Matt.
Keep an eye on those. Keep them safe. Will. Goodness me. It's not long now then before the results, and we get to... I can't wait to see what you've chosen.
I can't wait to see what you've chosen and what you were... agonizing so intently over.
I'm not gonna be able to sleep tonight. I'm very upset. Well, it's been a lot of fun.
It certainly has been.
But we're not quite done yet. There's one more thing to do before we go. We need to launch a special awards poll.
So you're telling me, actually, the fun's not quite over yet.
Oh, the fun's not over here, Adam. You thought you were going to get away from the fun, did you?
The fun will get you in the end.
As you no doubt know by now, we are awarding special prizes in distinct categories for our patrons to vote on.
Yes.
The Grimbledon Special Awards. This is running adjacent to the Grimbledon main tournament, and it's just for our patrons to vote on, but we're going to reveal these special awards in the final episode as a bit of extra fun.
As like an Oscars ceremony sort of thing.
Last time, we had Best Catchphrase.
Oh, yes.
This time, it's Best End Line.
Oh.
The Best Ending. And we have 9 nominations.
Whoa, it's a huge field there. Wow, 9. Okay, 9 nominees. Okay.
So when you think of fairy tales, you imagine, and they all lived happily ever after. Mm.
And you've not got 9 versions of that then for me.
In a sense. But that's, as we've seen, not the case with the Brothers Grimm.
No.
So... these are the nominations for Best End Line. The ones that have subverted expectations or stopped us in our tracks. Nomination number 1 is for And Then Everyone Was Dead.
Hey.
The dramatic end to the death of the little hen and ultimately the entire Chanticleer and Partlet trilogy. And I'd say the direct opposite of And They All Lived Happily Ever After.
And... it's all the better for it. It's iconic.
And then everyone was dead.
And then everyone was dead.
Everyone was dead.
I mean, if you were trying to up the stakes and have a grand... You can't get past that, I don't think.
Oh, okay. Well, we've come out the gate strong. Do you want to hear nomination two?
No.
We'll just scrap the rest of them.
I actually really do.
Nomination two. And he died and has remained dead to this day.
That's a classic.
The truly final word from the story, The Thief and His Master.
Oh, wow.
He died and has remained dead to this day. In case there was any doubt, he's still dead.
That's quite incredible. That's one of my favourites for sure. Oh, man, this is already
It's already tough. Sticking with the death theme. Nomination three. And if they are not dead, then they are still living.
It's the opposite.
Some real hardcore logic rounding out fledgling.
Oh, fledgling. Okay.
They're not dead. They're still living. Well, it makes sense.
Yeah, it does, doesn't it?
I hadn't thought of it like that.
Those are the two options.
Nomination four. He received the crown and has ruled wisely for a length of time. A starkly functional, unromantic ending from The Three Feathers.
Three Feathers. Yeah, that's quite prosaic, isn't it? And yeah. Vague.
I like that one at the time. It was just so matter of fact.
For a length of time.
He received the crown and has ruled wisely for a length of time. He may not continue to rule wisely. We don't know.
But he did it for an unspecified period of time.
And the story is over. Nomination five. My tail is done. See the mouse run. Whoever catches it may make himself a big fur cap out of it. The confusing touchdown from Hansel and Gretel.
I don't even remember that.
Adam was looking at me dumbfounded.
Where has he pulled this from? Whoa. What is he making a hat from a mouse? What are you talking about?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Similar lines here. Nomination six. And the mouth of the man who last told this story is still warm. The ending of The Bremen Town Musicians.
Oh, yes.
We're getting a lot of first-time nominations in this category.
Yeah.
But that's a classic one there.
Yeah.
The mouth of the man who last told this story is still warm. I think it took us a while to work out what that actually meant.
Yeah, I was particularly confused.
So I think it just means that the person who was the last person who told this story is the person saying that line, and they're saying, give me a cold drink or something.
Right, yeah.
I think. I don't know.
Now that I told you that story, I've got a warm mouth. Cool it down.
But I like the ones, and it's the same with the Hansel and Gretel one, where it comes out into the, storyteller is speaking about themselves.
Yeah.
And I think that comes from a tradition of, people actually going and telling stories and then being like, can you give me some free food or some bread or board or whatever?
Yeah.
But doing that with a humorous kind of touchdown at the end.
Yeah, exactly.
Nomination seven. Mr. Corbs must have been a very wicked man. A justification of extreme violence finishing off Mr. Corbs.
Whoa, we have got two entries from the same trilogy.
We do, in this category alone. I like the exclamation mark in this one. It ends with an exclamation mark.
He must have been a...
very wicked man.
Amazing.
Yeah.
I love it. I love that story. I am remembering the chaos of it. And I love the fact that they've attempted to justify it just in this last sentence of the... There's nothing else to justify it. It's just that one sentence at the end.
Which was added in a later version, right. If I remember correctly.
Yeah. I think you're right.
Nomination eight. My headdress was of snow. Then the sun came out and it was melted.
My coat
was of cobwebs and I had to pass by some thorns which tore it off. My shoes were of glass and I pushed against the stone and they said clink and broke in two. A real showstopper of an ending from Hans Married.
Yeah, I remember that one. And I remember thinking, what is he talking about? What is that? It's a run-on, what you might call a run-on sentence, isn't it? It's quite long, isn't it? For a final line of a story.
Well, I just remember it absolutely blew your mind at the time. And I have to say, I was expecting a cheer when I said it just now, but you just seem maybe a little less impressed than I thought you'd be.
Matt, I don't know what's going on in my head, to be honest.
Okay, it's been a long night.
I don't know how I feel about that one.
Well, I'm just happy this is the second nomination for Hans of the Hans trilogy fame. And that's good because he's not in Grimbledon. He was nominated for most iconic character and now for best end line.
Wow.
And I'm glad to see him there.
Yeah, no, me too. Get and some love. It's probably the most striking ending line in a certain way of the group.
Yeah,
I say it's quite full. It's a lot of details.
That's a lot to dig into. Well, the final nomination, number 9, is for "When they have done praying, the story shall be continued, but at present they are still praying without stopping." An ending that really upset Adam in The Fox and the Geese.
Oh, right, yeah.
Do you remember that?
Well, I remember how I felt about the story.
Yeah.
Which was, oh dear. Why, what, that was it?
But it was largely because of this end line.
Yeah.
The point being that the story goes on and on and on, right?
Right.
The story doesn't finish.
Yeah.
Because this is from the last story in volume 1.
Right. Oh, yes, yes, yes.
And it's now the last moment of the group stages. See what I've done?
Very fitting. Well done.
Because the story shall be continued, but we have to wait for them to stop praying. So the story hasn't really finished.
Yeah.
And that's what annoyed you.
Yeah.
Their kind of beautiful poetic way of ending volume 1.
Matt, it's annoying me again.
But some strong ones in there.
Very strong.
So we've got a fair few about death. We've got some very functional ones. We've got ones told from the storyteller.
Yeah.
And we've just got some weird ones.
Yeah. And I would say almost all of them are vying for that top pick. So we're now going to pick our favourite in secret and put them in an envelope to be revealed.
Yes, and while Adam is getting the envelopes out, just to remind patrons that this poll will be live tomorrow for patrons to vote on, and it will be live for 1 week, and the award will be given in the grand final. Also, just say this is the penultimate special award poll. There will only be one more after this. Right, Adam's given me my envelope.
Well, now that's done, and patrons will get to vote on that, and that poll's
live tomorrow. Yeah,
for a week, is that
for
right?
For a week, yeah. I was letting them know while you were fiddling around in your,
okay, your
envelope drawer.
Yes.
So they're all up to speed, don't worry.
Fantastic.
Wow. Well, it's been a busy, fun group stage marathon.
It certainly has. I've enjoyed it, recapping all of these stories, and it's crazy to know that once this episode's gone out and those first four polls will have closed, we will have narrowed the field down from 20 stories to 8. Just 8 stories left. Wow. In the tournament. Crazy.
Yeah, exactly. So please vote. Every vote counts.
Yeah.
Just to say, Group A was very tight.
Mm.
Very, very tight. So
every vote matters.
Every vote matters. So yeah, please get voting. But I cannot wait for the results episode. I think that's going to be particularly fun.
Yeah, I'm excited.
But the thing is, we might have to wait a little bit for the results episode because we've got 2 weeks of Group D poll running.
Yes.
And then we can't obviously
record
until that's closed.
Yeah.
And then find time to record and then edit and release. So the plan is to have an episode out in 2 weeks from now, a little filler episode. We've got some ideas, but we won't reveal them now, but there'll be something to tide us over before the group results episode, and we move on to the semi-finals. But hopefully it has been fun going down memory lane. It's our last trip down memory lane
now. Yeah.
I've
loved it.
Until the semi-finals.
Yeah.
I was tricking you there.
No, that's true. I was thinking, surely I'm not done with memory lane.
Look, I think I'm tired. I don't know what I'm saying. So it's probably best I head off home.
I think so.
And I'll avoid any giants or singing girls in towers or devils in the woods or any delicate looking flowers. I'll try not to trample on them.
Yeah,
on
please my way don't. Back. Please don't. And look out for that witch with supervision, because she can see everything that's
going on.
She
can run pretty fast.
Yes. Make haste.
Thank you, Adam. I always appreciate the advice. I will see you soon for another episode of Grim Reading.
See you then. Keep it grim, everyone.
Keep it grim.
Bye. Bye. If you'd like to support the podcast, please head over to patreon.com/grimreading to find out how. and also see the range of benefits available as a thank you from us. You can, of course, email us at grimreadingpodcast@gmail.com. We're on Twitter at grimreadingpod, and we're also on Instagram and Facebook at grimreading. You can find us on Podbean, podbean.com/grimreading, and we also have a website, grimreading.wordpress.com. Keep it grim.